Do you love St. Francis of Assisi? Of course you do. That's why you're watching this video. Wouldn't it be amazing if you could hear him at prayer, see the things that he says and hear them, feel what's in his heart? It would transform you. The following mystic, Adrienne von Speer, had this incredible gift where she could see how saints prayed all the way from the very beginning, the apostles, to ones in her own time. She lived in the 1900s. Unbelievable. You don't believe me? Wait till you hear about St. Francis of Assisi. If you'd like to support this channel in any way, please do so through Buy Me a Coffee. Let's get right into it. I saw St. Francis at first in his old age, at prayer and sickly, of an indescribable cheerfulness and purity and humility. Everything in him, everything that constituted his life, all his difficulties, are now transfigured and have become translucent. And this happened through prayer. The things that occupy him no longer contain anything at all that is purely personal. Not a trace of annoyance or injury or resentment for the unjust things inflicted on him. God alone is left, as well as perfect service in the indescribable happiness of one who serves and in uninterrupted contemplation. His contemplation is of a particular sort. It knows moments of grandeur that fall suddenly over and over again because a superabundance of visions has been given him. And in the periods between these visions, his spirit occupies itself with great ideas and inspirations. He evaluates them, but he does so while remaining at a certain continuous height. It is as if a person were to offer him food from time to time and leave it up to him to get by at other times. He receives what is presented to him with a spirit that corresponds to what is shown, and he is always particularly grateful to receive it. This is what his contemplation is like in his final years. But such an impulse was always there with him, and his first reaction was always gratitude. He accustomed himself in everything that happened in his life, always first and foremost to praise and to give thanks, even before he knows what it is. In fact, that he has received even before he accepts what he receives it, looks at it, and gives it a shape. She saw his stigmata, she was deeply horrified, and she thought that everyone would have been horrified as she was. Francis, who does not know what it is, but only that it is something that has to do in a profound way with the Lord, starts by giving thanks. He had previously thought a lot about the cross, always with a feeling of gratitude. He had also reflected without understanding on the Lord's wounds, and now he sees the stigmata on his hands. They strike him as something foreign, as something that simply does not belong to him, as if the Lord's wounds were like two rose petals that accidentally fell into his hands as he gazed at the rose bush. And as if the petals served simply to allow him to contemplate the roses better. He does not think of himself as a stigmatic. His wounds are simply there in order that he might see the Lord's wounds better, to understand them in a more intimate way. His peace is undisturbed. He has a certainty that everything that happens has a simple object, namely to praise God better. Only once he observes that the wounds stay with him, does he recognize that they are a particular gift that the Lord has given him. But in his eyes, they are nothing that sets him apart. Instead, they are an aid to teach him to pray in a new way, a better way to praise the Father through a more vivid memory of the Son. He always offers his hands and feet to God. He would never allow them to do something that was not of the Lord. He has, as it were, loaned his hands and feet to the Lord and entrusted them to him. They no longer belong to him. The Lord has taken his limbs from Francis for his own use. Francis has a certain respect for these limbs, as parents would have for a son of theirs who became a priest. It does not occur to him to compare himself on some point or another with the Lord. To the contrary, he has become lost to himself. When he was young, when he founded his order in the bloom of his youth, everything was already service and gratitude and humility. But he was burdened with a lot of the work. The poverty that was so dear to him was something he first had to learn for himself. He had to work out a unity between his life and his song of praise. His prayer outruns him. It is faster than he. It moves at a height that he himself has to expend great effort to reach. He is of such a humility that he learns something from each of his brothers, from every person that comes to him. In all the difficulties he encounters, he first gives praise, and once he has given praise, he is certain that the difficulties must have their meaning. And now he begins to reflect seriously on how he is going to deal with them. His chastity and his obedience are from first to last the fruit of his poverty. Ever since the time he began to believe in a way that he was completely alive, it was poverty that conveyed everything to him. It is as if Christ's poverty was the first thing he saw. This is what taught him how to give praise, to pray, to contemplate, and to live. Even his humility appears as a consequence of his poverty. When a person is so poor, then he has nothing but to be humble. His fellow human beings present a lot of difficulties to him because he loves them so much that they have a hard time living up to his love. He manages to love everyone just as if each individual were Christ himself. He comes with such a claim on them to be allowed to love them that they cannot begin to understand it. He is unable to adapt. He cannot soften his demand. This causes a lot of people to become alienated, and he suffers from this. But he has a very winning personality, and the good people begin gradually to understand. Until they have understood, he suffers, because in his simplicity, he does not comprehend how a person can think of the commandments to love one's neighbor as anything but the most urgent thing there is. His own poverty teaches him to see a form of poverty in everyone, and this attracts him. Starting from external, corporal poverty, his eyes open up to every other form of poverty, even poverty of faith, love, and hope. And if he offers his personal love to a poor person, then he also offers Christ's love with it in spirit. But he does not confuse his love with the Lord's love any more than he confuses his hands with the Lord's hands. He sees himself so much as a person who has been sent on a mission that he knows. The love he has to give is not his own, but is the Lord's love. This does not cause him to live in an impersonal way, to the contrary. And his love, moreover, does not become general and average. It is similar to John's love for the Lord. The ones who hurt him the most are those who do not want to have anything to do with poverty. He acknowledges the church's hierarchy, but he does so under the pressure of external and increasing difficulties. The difficulties within his order also increase and are brought to Rome, and Rome is not very willing to do what he desires. There are obstacles, delays. He would have been happiest if he could have transplanted his ideal there as well, and he feels in a certain fact contradiction between his ideal and the official hierarchical church. He would also like to achieve a certain form of equal standing for all the brothers in his order. In this respect, he is quite different from Ignatius. At bottom, he would like to have everyone obedient to everyone else. Obedience in relation to an elected superior lifts him out of the ranks and makes him either richer or poorer. Francis is so pure in his simplicity that he trusts people all too much. That is Francis of Assisi. I will see you in the next one.